Hi, Lake Marion, and welcome to Sunday morning. I'm really excited. As you all know, we've been on a journey for several weeks, taking the Lord's Prayer slowly and line by line, and trying to really examine what each of those parts of the prayer might hold for us as we pray them now, and as it hopefully gives us some courage and some ways to think about how that prayer comes alive for us today. And so I'm super excited today to have the three friends that you see in front of you to help us talk about the Lord's Prayer with a particular lens on that line in the Lord's Prayer that says, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." And so I'm going to have a conversation today about the intersections of forgiveness and justice, and also a little bit of a conversation, if we can get to it at the end, around what that all holds for us as a community of faith. And so the three people that you see are folks that have ties to Lake Marion Presbyterian Church. As they introduce themselves, they can kind of say what they want to about their connection to Lake B. And so to our friends, Laquita and Bobby Martin and Claudia, thank you so much for giving up your time to this conversation. All three of you are people that have determined and discerned by God's Spirit and work in your lives to get into the field of therapeutic health in community. And so that's the lens we're going to talk about, forgiveness and healing, particularly from the lens that you all bring as therapists. Keita, would you go first? Introduce yourself, to simply introduce yourself and say a little bit about who you are. Don't get into the big thing, but just your connection to Lake Burien.
Yeah, so my name is Laquita Dimps, and I'm pretty sure you guys have seen my husband, Benjamin Dimps, on the drums and walking through with his big afro and everything Sunday after Sunday and throughout the week. So that is my husband. And then my children, as well, Jada, Austin, and Carson, have participated there at Lake B. So that's my connection to Lake B, is my family or members there at the church.
Thank you. Claudia.
Hey, I'm Claudia Linares. My connection to Lake Burien is really, I think it was first Pat Thompson and getting connected with her, and then getting connected with Lena. There's other people who I've been in community with and have worked with.
Thank you. Bobby.
My name is Bobby Martin, and I've been connected to Lake B for like 15 years. I've been connected to Lena for like 25. Ugh, crazy to say that. we did ministry together in community with Lake B for a lot of years prior to Lena coming to Lake B. And then I was at Mount View Presbyterian and came to Lake B when Lena did. And my family, Fa'anaz, my wife, my children are Jaden, Tyson, Shane, and Atticus. We're around Lake B. Yeah.
Thanks, Bobby. As the three of these folks know, because of their connection and work in and with Lake Burien, they're very well familiar with Lake Burien's journey around issues of justice and race. And so we're going to try to pepper in some of those perspectives as we talk about healing and forgiveness. So with that, I'd like to maybe start with Keita, if you don't mind. I think your identity as an African-American woman in the community working here all of our stories we bring with us into the work that we do. So could you talk about that part of who you are, and maybe any ways that you understand who you are as an African-American woman in the work of healing and therapy in particular?
Yeah, so to answer that question, Lena, I kind of have to think about what brought me to this place as a therapist, as a Black woman in, you know, a therapist role. For me, my journey didn't start off, it started off totally different from where I am now. I have a background in school social work. I did that for a little bit when I lived in North Carolina. I have planned to go back to school to do social work. God worked some things out where I decided to do counseling. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do play therapy. That was my comfort zone, right? That's what I had experience in. But it was a shift that happened like my second year in college. I am in my third year, getting ready to graduate in June. But my second year, there was a shift. There was an incident that happened to a very close friend of mine that involved some police brutality here in Seattle. And just walking with my friend through that healing process that they had to go through, and recognizing, you know, being a Black woman, I had been living in the South. I had experienced racism, discrimination. But it was this one incident that I really saw how it affected my friend. It totally changed their perspective on leaving the house, on feeling safe, on driving. Just everything changed about the way that they live their daily life. And that sparked something in me that helped me realize that there's a healing that needed to take place in the Black community. My brother-in-law, who's a music artist, he has a song that talks about being God's hands and feet in the earth. And I really began to pray, God, what does it mean to be your hands and your feet? Like, I knew my connection was the healing, a healing agent in the mental health, but I didn't know exactly where. But walking with my friend through that healing process and just praying that I could be God's hands and feet. And what does that look like, right? Just communicating God's love in every role in my life as a Black woman, as a therapist, as a Black mother, right? Because I can't take this off. I can't take this off. This is who I am day in and day out. So just in my different roles, in my different walks within mental health, my prayer is, God, let me live out my calling in every aspect of my life, because I know that God's given me a gift. And I'm still trying to shape and mold that as I'm finishing out school, but I do know that there's such a strong need to focus on the healing in the Black community, as well as just people of color, right? You go to look up a therapist, and that was another thing. I had a lot of people, hey, I heard you're going into therapy. Can you help me find a therapist? But I want them to look like me. Like, I want to sit with a Black lady. I want to sit with a, you know, Hispanic. And it's not a whole lot, mm-hmm. right? So that even pushed me a little bit more of God calling me into this specific area of if there's work that needs to be done. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that. I was one of those people. I mean, I've had this conversation differently with all three of you, you know, working for so long in communities that have experienced varying degrees of trauma, young people, families that I know. I'm so grateful that God is calling people who have experience, who have walked in those places, who actually can bring or create actually space for the kind of conversation that needs to happen. That is different if you don't have a lot of experience in that space. And so I'm grateful for all three of you who are doing this work. Before we got on the call, I actually had said to these guys that I'm really super grateful for people who do the work that you do, because that's the deep, deep hard work. Claudia.
Hey, so I think for me, my story really begins with my family. So both of my parents are from El Salvador, and they migrated to the U.S. during the Salvadorian Civil War. And this war is known as one of the most brutal wars in contemporary Latin America. And I think when we think about war, we think about kind of like the social, political, economical, like, impacts of it. And so for me, I thought a lot, and I saw a lot of the mental health impacts that the war had. And so I was born in central LA in Westlake, McCarthy Park area, which has a huge Salvadoran community. And, I think that different people cope with trauma in different ways. And for me and my family, we turned to God in our way of coping. And, I think I grew up learning about how Jesus liberated and healed people, and learning about how God is love. And yet, I think it's sad to hear, but or to like kind of like become aware of, but in places that violence, and they have like deep-rooted history of oppression, a lot of times you can internalize that oppression and internalize that violence, and you can harm other people when you are harmed yourself. And so I think as a child, I noticed these things, and I noticed the way that it impacted my family. A lot of my family has mental health illnesses. And so I think from a very young age, I recognized the deep hurt and the deep wounds that were happening in my family. And for a while, I just had like these big questions, and I wanted to approach this work as a researcher. And I wanted to just ask questions and like figure them out. And I kind of like I kind of separated myself from it. And so it was until like recently that I started recognizing, right, like that, like hurt people, hurt other people too. And really recognizing that in order for me to heal other people, I needed to do that healing work for myself. And that really brought me more into that individual mental health therapy.
Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Martin, Bobby.
For me, I grew up in a house. Both my parents were social workers of sort. As I was hearing both of you guys talk, I was thinking about both of your journeys are very incarnate in nature. And I think that as I was, like, what formed me and what shaped me and what brought me to where I am today and who I am today. And it was being able to see the incarnation worked out in both of my parents. But I remember times where my mom had some pretty severe physical disabilities. And she ran a preschool for children that had special needs. And my dad ran a vocational training program for developmentally disabled adults. And I think I just saw the incarnation worked out in both of my parents and my family dynamic, my foster brothers and sisters, and the way that my parents served them. And as I kind of grew, and I don't think I ever thought for a second that I wasn't going to be in some type of social service as an adult. I didn't really know what that was going to look like. And I found myself in a community that was very diverse in the Rainier Valley when I was a freshman in college at Seattle Pacific. And my worlds just weren't, they didn't line up. I saw service take shape, but then I saw like I was a part of this structure that I was a beneficiary of so much privilege in my life. And and I guess I started out, we started this conversation, I was talking to Keita earlier about, you know, the savior, you know, complex sometimes we can perpetuate as counselors, as therapists. And I think I started out in ministry that way, thinking that I had something to bring. And pretty early on, I realized that I had nothing to bring and everything to gain from the community that I was called to serve in the Rainier Valley. And one of the places that I had to do some significant work in is that I didn't think that I was racist. I didn't think that I had anything about me that was racist. And I had to get to a place. And thankfully, I had a community that was willing to walk with me in a very gracious way that allowed me to explore those places where I actually did perpetuate racism. And and I was received well by that community and held well by that community. And when I got to a place that I was able to acknowledge the blind spots that I had in my life around race, that was kind of the first time that I really understood God's abundance of grace for me and for the community that I was a part of. That's the short version.
Yeah. Thanks, Bobby. You know, I think all three of you, as I listen to your stories, and I think this is true for all of us, right? We only bring who we are. And that's enough. That's enough to bring, because all of who we are, God has shaped and walked with us in. When Bobby calls it kind of being incarnate. It's the God still working through flesh, through people, that it's still God's way to work in the world is through people. And so who we are is who God uses, our story, and we don't have to be anything else but, or bring anything else with but what we have. And so that's, I think I wanted to do that because I wanted to now, you know, talk about this particular line of, about forgiveness. Because I think a lot of, we had some conversation last week, a little bit sort of digging into this idea of forgiveness. And all three of you kind of had some different ways that you have thought about forgiveness, some really questions about how the church has described what a prescripted, maybe, you know, what the way that forgiveness works in God's economy. And so that's, I think, as we're thinking about the Lord's Prayer, and Bobby said something earlier too that I want to name. Bobby said the line before this, which we talked about last week, was give us this day our daily bread. And this actually was said, I can't remember, maybe Ron even said it last week, but it's interesting that the first petition is for bread before we now talk about forgiveness, because of we're in desperate need of God's grace and abundance in the giving of bread in order to actually enter into the conversations and the ideas of forgiveness. So Keita, you talked a bit about the idea that forgiveness is a process that takes time. And as a therapist, could you just say a little bit more about how you see that?
Sure. So when you first reached out and asked, you know, for me to talk about forgiveness, you know, I kind of did some reflecting. I was like, God, before I can even talk to people about forgiveness, you know, kind of reflecting on times in my life where I was able to forgive, and times and asking God in places that I still haven't been able to forgive, right? Because I'm human. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I'm something that I'm not, or that I have it all together. And, you know, in reflecting and thinking about that, like you said, for me, it was a process. There was some church hurt that happened to me, a group of people that had hurt, and my name had went around, and really hurtful stuff. And with my mouth, I said, I forgive them, right? And I thought, that's the Christian thing to do. If I want to live in peace, I forgive them. Read this scripture, you know, forgive us our debts. Like, God calls us to forgive. But when I would hear their names or be in their presence, there was something that was still deep inside of me. And so that process for me began with asking God to uncover the things that I was still holding on to so he could cover me in the process, because I knew I couldn't do it on my own. Like, I had to make room for God. Keita was trying to just, you know, walk with her head held high and forgive those who did her wrong, because I'm a Christian and that's what I'm supposed to do. But deep down inside, my heart was torn to pieces. And it didn't happen overnight. Not to say that God can't heal and people can't forgive overnight and instantly. I believe that we serve an amazing God who's able to do that. But just speaking to my own experience, it was a decision that I had to make, a decision of faith to step out and trust that God would walk me through that healing process, right? First, acknowledging that I wasn't fully healed. I hadn't fully forgave this group of people. And then had to realize the difference between what forgiveness is and what it's not. Forgiveness didn't mean that I had to run back to that relationship. Forgiveness didn't mean that I, you know, condone their behavior. Forgiveness didn't mean that they shouldn't still be responsible for the behavior that they had. But what forgiveness meant for me was that I was letting go of that anger, that I was letting go of the shame, that I was letting go of the hurt. So God, like I said, could cover me in that process. And then just real quickly, I had four steps. I kind of already mentioned, like, the uncovering phase. First, acknowledging, God, I can't do this on my own. I need you to walk me through this and be with me. The second, the decision phase, right? It's free will. We don't have to. Like, you can walk around with a grudge on our shoulders and holding on to that trauma and that hurt and that pain, but you have to make that decision that this is something that you want to do. Then there's the work. There's work that you have to put into this process, right? Whether that's going to therapy, whether that's finding a circle of friends that you can confide in, whether that is just finding some additional coping skills or reading, journaling, whatever it is that you need to do to, for this process to start working, right? And then the fourth one is the deepening phase, really acknowledging how letting go and forgiving has empowered you and what you've learned from that situation, and what you've been able to hold on to and what you've been able to let go of. So yeah, for me, it was definitely a process.
And it sounds like that can take, there's no prescriptive amount of time for that. You know, for many people, that could take a lifetime.
Very, very possible. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I love the image of uncovering so that God can cover you in the, you know, that was a beautiful image for me to, because I think sometimes we're even afraid to open our hearts up or ourselves up to God for fear of, you know, the pain, and the unresolved stuff, and to believe that God covers us, covers over all of it is a real step of faith for a lot of us to kind of go, we really do have a God that will cover us and not condemn us.
Very much so. Yes. Thank God for that. Yes.
Yeah. Claudia, I saw you kind of agreeing a lot, and I was thinking back to what you shared in your story about kind of your family's story. When we talked last week, you had talked a lot about just that trauma, and I would love to hear if you would share with us kind of your current thinking on how forgiveness, the idea of forgiveness, with especially with the kind of trauma that you were talking about.
Yeah, so like before in the introduction, when I mentioned that, you know, like hurt people hurt other people too, there is this, I think the idea of forgiveness is like, has been such a journey for me, because like Larkita, I grew up thinking that if someone harmed me, I was automatically supposed to let it go because that's what a good Christian is supposed to do. And it was through like different experiences in my own personal healing that I learned that actually like forgiveness is a process. And when you experience trauma, it literally, you experience it in your mind, but you also experience it in your body. And so there's this book that's called The Body Keeps the Score that talks about all the different ways that like trauma impacts our brain, it impacts our body, impacts our development, all these different things. And so forgiving is not like this magic thing where you're just like, all right, you're forgiven and that's it. You know, it really takes time. And so last week I talked about how, you know, I deeply love my family and I deeply love my community, but within those spaces, I've experienced trauma. And so I've been like, I've wanted to just be like, all right, I'm done. Like it's all good. And yet like, you know, you can cognitively like say like, I've processed through this. I understand the deep hurt is connected to my childhood trauma, or like it's connected to this deep wound that I have. And yet like I can still have physiological responses when I see this person or when I'm in similar situations. And so that was kind of what I talked about last week.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, as you both have talked, I think it's, and maybe Bobby's going to affirm this, you know, scripture always says when it's affirmed three times, pay attention. But this idea that both of you have said, I thought because I was a Christian, this is what it meant. And I'm guessing a lot of people are listening and watching this and going, yes, that's, you know, as people are probably commenting on our conversation right now, I'm sure that there's people saying we kind of walk around with this shoulda, or we should, because this is what it means to be a Christian. And yet what I'm hearing both of you all have said so far is that it's way more layered, because we're talking about humans. We're not talking about machines, you know. So, Bobby, you know, you had some interesting things to share when we talked about this idea of forgiveness. You know, forgive us our debts as we forgive those, or as we forgive our debtors, right? And you had said, you know, who is forgiveness for, actually? And could you say, I mean, I'd love for you to just unpack that a little bit for all of us.
Yeah. Well, no pressure here to be the third that has to affirm. I thought that as a Christian, but actually that is
true. Not going with it.
I think that, you know, most of my life, you know, up until, you know, I mean, 15 or so years ago, I think that I thought that, or actually I was taught from the church that forgiveness was somehow intimately connected to the abuser and the perpetrator's healing, and that I had to forgive on their behalf, on behalf of the abuser. And and I think that one of the things that I have to remember often, and I like that, you know, Claudia, when you're talking about the embodiment, I mean, actually Joel talked about that last week. He talked about, the bread that we receive, right, is embodied bread, right? It's flesh. It's us. It's humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that we always have to carry that with us as we sit with people, in a therapeutic way. And I think that as I think about this now, I mean, it's a daunting task to walk with someone through a season of forgiveness or even a consideration of forgiveness. Yeah. But what I always have to remind myself, because of that, you know, it's somewhere in my body, it comes up too, right? Claudia, it's like somewhere in my body, I still remember I have to forgive on behalf of my abuser. And this person sitting in front of me has to forgive on behalf of my on behalf of their abuser. I know intuitive. I know that that's not right though. Right. But I still go there with, I know it's my first inclination. And so I kind of have to fight with myself at times where, and really keep forgiveness about the person that's sitting in front of me and the connection that forgiveness has to their healing. Mm-hmm. And separate it from the abuser or the perpetrator. And at times it's hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, as you all have been talking, in my mind, I keep going back to the Lord's Prayer, right? Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. First of all, I think that the petition is for our forgiveness for us. Right. I love that, you know, that there is this this idea that's going on in the prayer of awareness of our own kind of wrong, whatever we need to be forgiven for. I think a lot of times, you know, when we're asking for forgiveness, I don't know that it's always for forgiveness as much as it is for healing from, you know, things that we all are, that I carry shame about. Somebody once said, guilt is when you are sorry for what you've done, and shame is when you are sorry for who you are, right? And I sometimes when I kind of understood that, I actually was kind of going in my mind through, I think a lot of what people suffer from is a sense of feeling bad or feeling sorry for who they actually are. I think shame is connected here in some kind of way. And maybe you guys run into that in your work with people, is that maybe a lot of what we're talking about is helping people recover their sense of humanity and overcoming, you know, whatever people are living with in terms of the shame that they've carried with them, that has shaped identity in a lot of ways, so that then they can actually move on and be people who can release forgiveness if needed.
Yeah, I'd like to say something, Lena, to what you just said about shame. I work with domestic violence survivors, and we just did an exercise with them, I statements, right? Because what you've been told about yourself and what you feel bad about yourself, that gets lodged in here and then in here because you actually start believing it. So mm-hmm. You have to actually start speaking what you want to believe about yourself. Like you, something's happened to you. You are not, you know, a victim, you're a survivor. Like you've been told that for whatever reason, you've been shamed for something and you've been told that. So that's what you start believing here. And then you start carrying it in here. But like I said, we started doing I statements. I believe that I am free. I believe that I am beautiful. I believe, like, whatever it is that you haven't been believing about yourself because that's been covered by shame, you start speaking that, and then those thoughts and then those feelings in your heart will start, you know, transforming into what you say that you are.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I think about, you know, I mean, all of us have talked about how significant community is, and we're having this conversation with our church family and community. And I think that one thing that I have learned, and I've learned it from many different people, so I won't quote one person, but, you know, shame only grows in isolation, and the only way to minimize shame or devalue shame and its hold on us is in community. Because we need one another's validation. We need one another to hear our stories so that we can, allow for a connection point, allow for them to validate that we're not alone. And I think that, I was just thinking about the significance of community, you know, where, we are a community, and we are a community that, has the ability to heal. I mean, we're as therapists, as individuals, we can take people as far as we can, but it's really in community that people find that healing from that portion of shame.
I think that's a great kind of segue to just our last bit of this conversation. You're right, Bobby. I mean, y'all are part of the community of faith at Lake Berean. And so I would love to hear, to Bobby's point, if healing can come in a community of faith, you know, what kind of conditions would you all sort of hope for us as a community that can be agents of God's healing?
For me, and my last tip is specifically speaking to injustices, as we were talking about, like, the individual effects and the community effects and how it's community health. Right. And just thinking about how the Black community has such heightened stress levels right now, depression, anxiety, fear, just all these things that affect an individual, you know, does play on a bigger spectrum of community. And so just speaking to that, it's just a season to listen and listen to understand, not listen to respond. Right. Like, I have so many friends who's reached out to me. What can I do? What can I do? I'm just like, just listen. Pick up a book and read, like, educate yourself. Even me as a Black woman, there's so much history that I did not know that I've been trying to just dig into so I can listen as well to other people's experiences, because another Black woman, another Black man, their experience may not be the same as mine. So I am too listening to my brothers and sisters, and consistency. Like, right now we have a lot going on in the media and the news, like, and is it just right now? Is it a trend? Like, just be consistent wherever you find your place at in the community to help and heal. When it's not being flashed on the news, when it's not constantly on your Instagram feed, still work in that aspect of your calling and where God has placed you, because that's where change is going to come, is within your consistency. And then one more thing, prayer, right? Like, we need policy change, no doubt. Like, I would never argue that, but we also need to pray for changes of hearts and people's perspectives and people's thoughts, because that's where the real change, and that's when people, like I said, will begin to uncover so God can cover them. And I think that's when the real healing will start taking place, as we as believers keep praying that God will continue to work in the hearts of those who need a change, and forgiveness can take place then, I think.
Thank you.
I really love what y'all have shared. I think, like, one thing that I was just thinking about when, like, Bobby mentioned the isolation, is that trauma, like, it disconnects us from ourselves and it disconnects us from other people. And so continuing to live in that isolation doesn't give us an opportunity to tell our body and to tell our mind that we are safe. And, you know, having healthy relationships, having relationships that are grounded in care and love, have the capacity to really heal people. And so I think, like, you know, leading with that is really healing work. I would also say that forgiveness doesn't always mean reconciliation. There's a difference. So the forgiveness we can do as individuals. But if we really want to be live as a community and do things differently, then we have to hold ourselves accountable for the places that we have failed or that we have made those mistakes. And, you know, reconciliation also doesn't mean going back to the way things were. As we've all discussed, forgiveness is a process, and coming back together is also a process that for communities who have been deeply traumatized. And speaking of the Central American community, being with people can sometimes like trigger us. There's a trust process that needs to be built, and a process that we need to understand that we are safe among, you know, this community. And so I would say that I hope that we would know that after COVID and all of these different like history, and that when we come back together, we shouldn't do things the same, that we should, reconciliation should look different, like in terms of our relationships with each other. And the last thing is that I think we should normalize talking about triggers. It's sometimes like with communities that have been deeply traumatized, we don't always speak about like what can I do to ensure that you feel safe in this place. And speaking in that language really validates our experiences, and knowing that that we're, you know, that we're being taken care of and validated.
That's really good. Thanks, Claudia.
I love what both of you said. I think honestly the only thing that I would add is that this healing community has to exist without judgment. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we jump to conclusions, we hear people's stories, and we're mapping out, okay, does this align? Does this not align? And I think that withholding judgment as an individual and as a community is something that we have to offer people that are coming to us and being vulnerable and willing to share their deepest and darkest hurts and pains and trauma and shame for that matter. But yeah, withholding judgment is key.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for just the your passion, and it was very evident that that you guys are super committed and passionate about the work that God has called you to do. And I think for our congregation, as I was preparing for this talk today and thinking about it, you know, not all of us are called to be youth pastors or youth directors or therapists or whatever, but each of us has a unique vocation that God has given for us uniquely to do and to be about. And so hopefully there were things in the conversation that will encourage you to think about, you know, how we all can be better people who listen, better people who listen without judgment, you know, more patient with ourselves and with others as we kind of try to live out this idea of forgiveness in our own lives and in the lives of the people that are around us. And lastly, I think as a congregation, I'm really grateful for the words that you gave us, so wise and good reminders of who God has called us to be. So thanks to you guys, all three of you. Super, super grateful. Thank you.